It's a Politics Wednesday edition of River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Biden roars back. Sanders wins the West. Bloomberg exits and Warren reassesses her campaign. Joining us to pick apart yesterday's Super Tuesday results, Donna Hoffman, professor of political science at the University of Northern Iowa in our Cedar Falls studio. Hi, Donna.
Hi, Ben.
Stefan Schmidt is with us, the Lucan Endowed Professor of Political Science at Iowa State University in our Ames studio. Hello, Stefan.
Hello, Ben.
Well, so much to get to. We want to have our listeners invited as well, because I know from caucus coverage and all kinds of calls over the last months on this program, there are plenty of people who supported candidates that have now exited. We want to hear from you voters who supported a candidate that has recently exited the race. And there are plenty of them. Where is your support now? And how do you see the race differently now than you did before South Carolina, before Super Tuesday, just a week ago? Join our conversation, 1-866-780-9100. 1-866-780-9100. Again, looking for those who supported a candidate who has now exited the race or didn't do as well as thought. Where is your support now? 1-866-780-9100, river to river at iowapublicradio.org. Well, Donna, Stefan, he won in states where he didn't campaign. He won in states where he had no offices, in states where he was overwhelmingly outspent in advertising. He won in states where his opponents had a better organization. Former Vice President Joe Biden surprised everyone, I think, yesterday, taking at least 9, I think, heard at the top of the hour, 10 states, probably of the 14 in yesterday's contest. Biden and Sanders now emerging as the party's clear front runners. Sanders with the day's biggest prize, California, along with Colorado, Utah, and his home state of Vermont. Senator Elizabeth Warren failed to win any states, including her home, Massachusetts, where she came in third. Michael Bloomberg won only in American Samoa. He dropped out this morning to endorse Biden. Let's get some initial reactions to you, Donna Hoffman. What is your first takeaway for us?
Well, you know, if we look back to just a week ago, we were a few days after Nevada, South Carolina hadn't happened, and now here we are. And so things can change in this race, obviously, very quickly. But now we're getting down to a consolidation, more or less, of candidates, voters aligned around those candidates. And you have, on the progressive side of the Democratic Party, you have Sanders, Warren still in as of now. On the moderate lane, as we usually say, it's really come down to Biden. And so, in effect, we have a two-person race here at the moment. And, you know, again, in terms of winning states and the percentage of voters, we want to make sure that we're looking at those delegates and the delegates that are earned, because that's the key thing here in terms of going into the convention with, for the Democrats, 1,991 delegates to win that nomination. And that's what the race is going to be about, is getting those delegates. And so, you know, Sanders winning California rich, a delegate state like California, delegate rich state like California, is going to keep him close. You know, as it stands right now, the delegate race is relatively close. Mm-hmm. But certainly, I think we can say that Biden has the momentum. And, you know, previously with Joe Biden, Joe-mentum has been a phrase that has been uttered, and we're seeing it again, it looks like.
Okay, Stefan, before you respond, I want to have us listen to a little bit of an exuberant Joe Biden speaking to supporters in California last night as those Super Tuesday results streamed in.
For those who have been knocked down, counted out, left behind, this is your campaign! Just a few days ago, the press and the pundits had declared the campaign dead. And then came South Carolina, and they had something to say about it. And we're told, well, when he got to Super Tuesday, it'd be over. Well, it may be over for the other guy. Tell that to the folks in Virginia, North Carolina, Alabama, Tennessee, Oklahoma, Arkansas, Minnesota. Massachusetts. It's too close to call.
That may be turned into a yes, Joe Biden. 10 of the 14 states now looking to be won by former Vice President Joe Biden. Stefan, what a turnaround, huh?
Well, it is a turnaround, and we were, I think, misled and blindsided because when Bernie Sanders blew away Nevada, you know, everybody said, well, you know, he's got the Latino voters and he's got basically the diversity vote. And, you know, Nevada is not very representative, really, of the rest of the country, certainly not of the states that came up 3 days afterwards, because Bernie Sanders is not performing well at all with black voters. And on Super Tuesday, with the exception of a few states, black voters were really the road to this incredible success of Joe Biden. And, you know, endorsements don't always count, but my takeaway is that Jim Clyburn's endorsement in South Carolina, I know Jim Clyburn because I used to have a sailboat in the summer in Charleston, so I met him several times. He's a fantastic figure and a real opinion leader. And when he endorsed Joe Biden after the debate, I think it was a tremendous surge of energy for Biden in all of the states on the East Coast and the South that have huge numbers of black voters in the Democratic primary. So that was an interesting, I think, turn of events.
Mm-hmm. Let's go to our callers. We're asking our listeners, those who supported a candidate that has recently exited the race, join our conversation, especially you. We want to hear from you. Where is your support now? Jamie is joining us from Des Moines. Hi, Jamie.
Hello. How are you doing this afternoon?
Very good. You were supporting a candidate that is now out.
Yes, I'm of Latino descent. I originally supported Pete Buttigieg. I caucused for him, thought he was going to go all the way, and now I'm going with Joe Biden.
Okay, yeah, after the Iowa caucuses, it looked like Pete Buttigieg had a good chance there. How are you feeling about the Democratic Party? Are you a registered Democrat or an independent?
I have been a registered Democrat since I was able to vote when I was 18. So.
Okay. With the quick series of turns of events we've had in the last few days, how are you feeling about the nominee, if it's Biden?
Pretty good. I feel as though a lot of the Democrats are circling around him and giving the support.
All right. Jamie in Des Moines, thank you so much. Let's go to John in Davenport. Hi, John. What's your story? Did you back a person who has since exited?
Well, she hasn't exited yet. I have supported Elizabeth Warren originally, but I don't like this game that I see the Democratic Party playing, and I don't think of Elizabeth Warren as the progressive that I thought she was in the beginning.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so where is your support now?
I have decided to go with Bernie Sanders. I think he's the only one that is talking about the issues that are affecting people's real lives. I think that health care is a human right, and I don't understand why there's so many people fighting against it. I mean, it's corporate greed, and they're the people that fund the Democratic Committee, the Democratic Party.
Okay, John, thank
they
you very much.
The Republicans, too, but I'm so sad about Elizabeth Warren. I really loved her.
John in Davenport, thank you for your views. Let's talk a little bit about that since John raised that. Donna, with you, I mean, we've had two words, electability. Beating Trump is one thing, but whether the Democratic Party is going to be unified there. John, react to John's words and what you see going forward now with the split in the Democratic Party. Will there be unity?
Well, I think eventually they will get down to that because, generally speaking, that's what we see in this contest. That's part of what a nomination contest is. Sometimes it comes into more clear focus when a party is fighting amongst themselves, essentially, for the nomination, and they're going to run against an incumbent president. So you don't have that infighting within the opposition party. But I thought John's comments were interesting, the Warren supporter. You know, whether Elizabeth Warren stays in the race or whether she drops out, I think that's a question. It is not necessarily evident that her supporters will automatically go to Bernie Sanders. So I was interested to hear that John said, you know, if he's a, he would be a Sanders supporter in that sense. And so were she to drop out, I think that would be interesting to see how her former supporters decide then at that point. And then further, whether she would endorse someone else, whether she, what the timing on that would be, would she do it very immediately like Amy Klobuchar did, Pete Buttigieg did pretty quickly, or would she hold back? Because that can be an important signal for her former supporters were she to drop out. Mm-hmm. Of course, she could stay in the race. There, she has signaled before that she might be interested in taking this all the way to the convention. I think that's highly unlikely. Lots of candidates say that. Lots of people in the media like to talk about brokered conventions and contested conventions and that kind of thing. But at the end of the day, it's in the party's interest to consolidate around a candidate and unify behind that person. And I think we're at the stages where we're seeing that consolidation, that, you know, attempt to build some unity here, even though we're not, you know, totally to the nominee yet. Mm-hmm. The race has narrowed significantly.
Where do you stand on this question of unity, Stefan?
I have more doubts than Donna. I mean, right now we see Bernie Sanders is really an unusual candidate in the sense that he really represents a much more progressive, actually kind of way out socialist view of things. And that is very rare. I mean, you rarely see that. We saw some socialist candidates running in the 1920s. They eventually sort of gave up, and the Democratic Party became the party of the progressives. But, you know, Bernie supporters really have been angry. They think that he has been cheated by Hillary Clinton. And, you know, if he doesn't win the nomination now, at least some of the ones that are my students, I don't think are going to give in. And I heard several Bernie supporters say the revolution continues. And, you know, the Democratic Party is not the party of revolution, frankly. And if they think the revolution continues, that could be bad news for Democrats, because I don't know where the Bernie supporters will then go. I think it's going to be really difficult to unify the party. This is not a normal year.
Mm-hmm. I wonder, when the two of you were digging down into sort of the exit polling data, what, Donna, what did you see there? Stefan mentioned earlier the African-American vote being so impressive. What else have you taken interest in the exit polling from yesterday?
Well, so part of Sanders' appeal to people is that he, for the general election, I would add here, is that he can bring in new voters, some of those younger voters, for example. And we have not seen Bernie Sanders being able to deliver on that, for example. So there is a split there. Younger voters tend to support Sanders. Older voters tend to support Biden. But in the states where, you know, we saw a huge turnout in Virginia, almost double over 2016, and Biden got 53% of the vote in Virginia, which is really kind of astounding. And so in some of the states where the turnout looks to be pretty high, certainly over 2016, some there may be some records broken. Those are the states where Biden actually did better than Sanders. And so part of Sanders' general election appeal in the argument of he's the best one to take on Trump is that he can activate these, you know, those voters Stefan was talking about, those students, people who are disaffected in the system, that he can activate those. Here's the problem for Sanders' strategy there is that those voters tend to be fickle in terms of their voter turnout. The voters that are supporting Biden and that he's going after tend to do much better in terms of being likely voters that are regular voters. And those people showed up. Another thing from the exit polls, we know that a lot of late deciders went for Biden. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there again is where you see a sequential party primary being useful. So one of the reforms in the aftermath of Iowa, of course, is what do we do with the system in the next cycle? One of the reforms out there is a national primary. But here you can see why a sequential primary may be useful for a party, because voters can look and see what happens in other states. They can weigh those things. They can see, you know, Biden came in a fourth in Iowa. He did even worse than that in New Hampshire. And then here he comes. And then he gets, you know, all endorsements aren't equal. He gets some key endorsements, and that momentum goes to him. And that's going to get him earned media. that he doesn't have to pay for. It's going to give him people giving him money. He's been a little bit behind in the money race. And so you can't discount that momentum that he has in that sense. And those are, you know, again, going back to the exit polls, you know, that promise that Bernie Sanders has held out there doesn't at this point seem to be materializing. Now, we should add that, you know, basically 38% of the delegates now after Super Tuesday are going to be or have been awarded. So there's still a lot of room in this race. And again, the delegates are still relatively close. We don't even know the final count there. But, you know, the exit shows that Bernie was not able to do that.
Let's go to John. John, on the line. Where are you calling from, John? Boone?
I'm calling you from Boone.
Okay. What is your question?
Well, it's more of a comment mixed with a question. I'm 76, 77 years old, and unlike many of my same age, I mingle with a lot of younger people because of my past profession as a teacher. And something that the Democratic Leadership Committee are ignoring is the way the younger voter, the younger generation vote. Mm-hmm. And I'm talking with many of them, and let me tell you that I'm also a statistician. I have a PhD in statistics. In talking with them and sampling them, I realized that I received a lot of angry and upsetting comments from them, not because of the latest result, but because of the way they see the Democratic leadership are staging a coup against Bernie Sanders, and they telling me that they are not perhaps large confidence, I see them, they may not vote
okay.
in the November election.
John, let's put your point to Stephen Schmidt, first of all. John seems to indicate in his tally that maybe some Sanders supporters, if Sanders does not get the nomination, will not go over to Biden. They'll stay home.
Yeah, that's probably true. I mean, there's an old saying that, you know, when you're 18 to 25 years old, you're a socialist. When you're 50 to 70 years old, you become conservative or moderate. And I think maybe if that really holds, younger voters, you know, maybe are more tolerant. Now, I will tell you that Bernie Sanders' position on issues, the fact that he said lots of nice things about Cuba and Nicaragua and, you know, did his honeymoon in Moscow and so on, that didn't really sit very well with the voters who voted for Joe Biden. I mean, he an unfavorable view of socialism. He was 27 points above Sanders, and Sanders got those 17% of those who viewed socialism favorably. So I think, you know, there is a generational as well as certainly an ethnic and racial, perhaps even a gender gap, because Bernie Sanders is not doing as well with women. Biden is up 11 points in right now in median support from women. And those are all, I think, also groups that the Democratic candidate has to be able to rope in and bring back into the corral and move forward in November. So it's very interesting to see that there are really, really big differences between the Sanders supporters and the Biden supporters.
Okay, let's listen to Bernie Sanders last night. We heard from the other big winner last night, Joe Biden, a few minutes ago. This is Bernie Sanders addressing supporters from his home state of Vermont. He won that. That was the only state in the East that he won. In his address, Sanders highlighted what he considers to be major differences between the record and political style of himself and fellow frontrunner Joe Biden.
So we're going to beat Trump because this will become a contrast in ideas. One of us in this race led the opposition to the war in Iraq. You're looking at him. Another candidate voted for the war in Iraq. One of us has spent his entire life fighting against cuts in Social Security, wanting to expand Social Security. Another candidate has been on the floor of the Senate calling for cuts to Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, and veterans programs.
Okay, Donna Hoffman, we heard from Bernie Sanders there. What do you think of the core Sanders supporters at this point?
They are oftentimes, so the ones that are ideologues that, you know, firmly believe in those things without give or take that Sanders is talking about, they very well may sit this out. It kind of depends on how Sanders, you know, behaves should Biden win the nomination, and what does Sanders do. But, you know, I also want to go back to the comment from the previous caller, the notion that you know, this is being seen by some of Sanders' supporters as a coup in the Democratic Party. Well, you know, one of the things you have to put into perspective here is that Sanders fundamentally is not a big D Democrat. That is, in the Senate and in the House before, when he was a House member, he's always been an independent. And he has stood on that principle. He stood on that ideology that he is an independent. He calls himself a democratic socialist. And so it is no surprise that the establishment part of the Democratic Party is hesitant to support him. They were also hesitant to support him in 2016. If you look at the way the superdelegates, their support in 2016, overwhelmingly they went for Hillary Clinton. Because superdelegates are public leaders and elected officials within the Democratic Party. And so Sanders is really this insurgent candidate, this unusual candidate in this sense, that's coming into the Democratic Party's nomination. But in Congress, he is not a Democrat. Now, he caucuses with the Democrats, but he maintains his independence. After he went back to the Senate after 2016, he didn't change his affiliation to being a Democrat. He maintained that he was an independent.
Okay, we're going to go away for a few minutes and come back with Donna Hoffman, professor of political science at the University of Northern Iowa, Stephen Schmidt of Iowa State University, our political scientists on board as we pick apart Super Tuesday. And we're asking you this hour, we want to hear from you if you supported a candidate that has recently exited the race. Pete Buttigieg, Amy Klobuchar, Tom Steyer, and most recently Michael Bloomberg. Warren seems to be teetering, assessing her campaign, according to a report by Politico. Where is your support now if you supported one of these candidates who has exited or showing signs of exit? 1-866-780-9100. Our email, rivertoriver@iowapublicradio.org. I'm Ben Kiefer with Stephen Schmidt and Donna Hoffman, back with more Politics Wednesday after a short break. It's Politics Wednesday edition of River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer with Stephen Schmidt of Iowa State University, Donna Hoffman of the University of Northern Iowa, our political scientists. This day after Super Tuesday, there were 14 states in yesterday's contest. It looks like 10 of those go to former Vice President Joe Biden, in quite a turnaround from when you saw the way things were just a week ago. Bernie Sanders taking the biggest prize of the day, California, along with Colorado, Utah, and his home state of Vermont. Senator Elizabeth Warren failing to win any states, including her home state of Massachusetts, where she came in third. According to Politico now, they evidently talked to an aide on the Warren campaign, spending today with her campaign team to, quote, assess the path forward. Here is Elizabeth Warren addressing supporters from Detroit last night.
You know, pundits, friends, neighbors are all saying you have to second guess yourself on this. They're playing games about prediction and strategy. You know, guess what your neighbors are up to here. But prediction has been a terrible business, and the pundits have gotten it wrong over and over.
Okay. Donna, let me go to you. What happened to Senator Warren in terms of these results? She was once seen as a front runner and has faded. Why, do you think?
Well, I can't really answer that question, but, you know, she had an appeal. She was in that lane with Bernie Sanders. And, you know, there for a while, it looked like some of Sanders' support, especially from 2016, had faded and had gone to her. And then it kind of reversed itself. And I don't know yet that we can pinpoint exactly why that is, because Warren is actually a pretty good campaigner. You heard a little bit of that, you know, there. She speaks effectively. She has a passion in the way that she talks about issues. She has a plan, as she will tell you, for lots of different things. And, you know, at the end of the day, that may be some of what has held her back a little bit. Not that I think that's a bad thing. I think plans are a good thing, but she is a little bit wonky in her approach. And while as an academic, I think that's what all candidates should do. Sometimes that is not always what voters are looking for. They're looking for somebody who they can respond to in kind of a visceral gut type way, and less with their brain, more with their heart type of thing. And I think that's some of Warren's problem.
Stefan, you agree with that?
Ben, Donna has not touched on, I think, what many researchers are sadly concluding, and that is obviously that a lot of people who vote in primaries and who go to caucuses just are not ready for a woman to be the president, and that Hillary Clinton, you know, got the nomination, but there were always questions as to whether Americans would vote for a woman for president. I think the gender issue is a real obstacle.
How do we pick that apart from all the other factors?
No,
that
you can't, but you can pick it apart by the fact that none of the women running in 2020 are still viable.
Okay. Donna, do you want to weigh in on that?
Sure. I was just going to say, you know, I think Stefan, you know, is right about that. Here's one of the things that you can internally have voters within a party doing. And I think maybe we saw this with Cory Booker, too, because Cory Booker dropped out early, was an African-American candidate, was not able to get traction that a lot of people thought he was able to get. And in part, sometimes Democratic primary voters, Republican primary voters do this as well. They try to figure out, well, I might like this person, but I don't think people are ready for this kind of candidate, whether it's an African-American candidate, whether it's a female candidate. And I think Elizabeth Warren has put it, you know, this way herself. I'm electable if you vote for me, or people around her at least have said that. She's electable if you vote to elect her. And that is, you know, an aspect of voters trying to vote strategically rather than sincerely. And that is something that, you know, we have not made as much progress on as I think we want to have
Americans,
as a country.
Or Americans are more sexist and a little more racist than we would like to accept.
Let's go back to our phones. We're asking for our listeners to weigh in, especially if you are a voter who supported a candidate who has now recently exited the race. 1-866-780-9100. Let's go to Mike. Mike in Magnolia. Is that right, Mike?
Hi.
Hi.
Mike from Magnolia.
Yeah, go ahead, Mike. You're on the air. Welcome to the program.
Yeah. Okay, hey, thank you. You know, I was Pete Buttigieg. My whole family, there's four of us voting in this house, two, an 18-year-old and a 20-year-old. We're all Pete Buttigieg. My sister lives right next to us. We live on a farm, but my sister lives right next to us. Her house was divided between Elizabeth Warren and Bernie. And the Bernie people are still going to vote for Bernie. And my sister is going to go for Joe Biden. We'll all go for Joe Biden. And I think a caller said earlier that the kids may not show up to vote, but my sister and I will drag the Bernie supporters kicking and screaming to the polls.
Okay, Mike, thanks for your view from Magnolia. Let's go to Joseph. Joseph, I believe, in Iowa City. Hi, Joseph.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yes, sure can. You're on the air. Welcome to the program, Joseph.
Hi, thank you. Yeah, Bernie's politics and mine have aligned since 1976, but I also think that it's American politics, unlike European politics, are shirts and skins. And when it comes down to it, it will line up behind a mainstream Democrat. So if I could vote today, I caucus for Bernie, but if I could vote today, it would be for Biden. Thank you.
Okay, Joseph in Iowa City, no time there for a follow-up. Would have been nice to hear more explanation there. Let's talk a little bit about one thing we haven't mentioned, the money Michael Bloomberg bowing out after, what, a couple $100 million gone into, or more than that, into this campaign. Stefan, what do they tell us? What do these results tell us about money buying elections?
You can't buy elections. I've said it over and over again. There have been lots of races for the Senate and other slots where billionaires or millionaires were spending huge amounts of money and they didn't connect. I mean, voters in the end, you know, they watch the ads and they, you know, look at the social media postings and stuff, but they really go to their mind and their heart when they go and vote. And, you know, Bloomberg didn't have a lot of hearts and minds of Democratic voters. And that's just the reality. But I think Joe Biden may now, however, have a lot more money as he goes forward, because Bloomberg, I think, is going to fund a lot of things for Biden.
Okay. Has he said so? I haven't seen the reports on that. I saw
but he's endorsed Biden.
So.
You know, but he wants, you know, Bloomberg really hates Donald Trump. And Donald Trump has insulted him, you know, little Bloomy and stuff. And when that happens to a billionaire, they take revenge. And I think the revenge is going to be to try and make sure that a Democrat defeats Donald Trump in the fall. And you know, Bloomberg has a lot of money. He doesn't care. He'll spend it. I think he'll spend a lot of money to support Biden.
Bloomberg exiting after Super Tuesday, but Pete Buttigieg, Amy Klobuchar after South Carolina, before Super Tuesday. Donna, how much did these quick exits from the race by those two? Tom Steyer also exiting. I don't remember if he endorsed someone after South Carolina. How much did these endorsements, how much were they worth here in this turnaround?
Well, endorsements can be a varying quality. So, you know, earlier Stefan was mentioning Jim Clyburn in South Carolina. That was a quality endorsement and came at a pivotal time for Biden. Buttigieg and Klobuchar obviously kind of falling on their swords in some ways over the weekend. And especially Amy Klobuchar, you know, she dropped out before her home state voted, and it was going to vote in a matter of days. And she did so because, and Buttigieg too, because the argument that they were splitting that moderate lane resonated with them, and they got out. And you know, I think Pete Buttigieg has, he was a very good candidate in many ways, didn't have a lot of experience, but good in other ways. And he's very young. I think he has a future in politics. He's betting on Biden now. I doubt that in the short term, Buttigieg can win a statewide race in Indiana, but he can go off into a Democratic presidential administration if there is one in 2021. Amy Klobuchar may be somebody that, you know, is being considered for vice president. So certain endorsements can matter. Other endorsements may not be as important. We've got Michigan coming up. Michigan is an important state. It's going to be the most delegate-rich state next week. Mm-hmm. And Biden got Jennifer Granholm this morning, I believe, as an endorsement. She's a former governor of Michigan, and that may be significant. So endorsements can be useful. And then again, sometimes, you know, you get supporters, you may get money. The Bloomberg endorsement. Bloomberg has said that he would, if he dropped out, that he would put his money to work to elect a Democrat. And so we would expect that.
Mm-hmm. Let's listen to Joe Biden last night thanking his former competitors who have endorsed him in recent days.
We won Minnesota because of Amy Klobuchar. And we're doing well in Texas because of Beto O'Rourke. And that's why I was so proud, so incredibly proud to have Mayor Pete's endorsement as well. There's a man of character, intellect, and courage.
Stefan, do you call this happening ever before in this kind of a primary, people falling in line very quickly, falling on their swords, I think, as Donna put it?
Not quite this way. I mean, I think it was a moment that reflects how deeply troubled mainstream sort of conservative or middle-of-the-road Democrats are about Bernie Sanders. And, you know, in the exit polls, 40% of Sanders supporters said that they support health care, single government plan. 49% of people who voted for Joe Biden said no. They oppose that. And since Bernie Sanders kind of front-end campaign promise is to to have basically a government payer for all player single payer health care.
Mm-hmm.
If that's how voters are feeling, you know, that position is not actually an asset for him.
Mm-hmm. Let's go back to our phones. We have plenty of callers and not much time to do that, but we do want to get a sampling of what our listeners are thinking, including William from Iowa City. Hi, William.
Hi. My wife was for Buttigieg and I was for Klobuchar, and we are firmly behind Biden. I'm old enough to remember 1972. I firmly believe if Bernie's a candidate, it will be McGovern versus Nixon again. Yeah.
Mm, okay, so 72, a replay there. I think, Stefan, I think you've written about this, haven't you?
And I was at Iowa State in 1970, and so I was here for that 72 catastrophe of essentially, it's true what the caller said, you know, a very progressive candidate with wonderful, interesting ideas, just couldn't sell them to voters. And maybe things have changed a little bit now, but you know, most people don't know that Bernie Sanders served as one of the Vermont Electoral College electors for Andrew Pulley in 1980. Andrew Pulley was the candidate of the Socialist Workers Party, which is a communist party. It's not democratic socialism. It's actually a communist party. And you don't think that the Republicans are going to make enormous hay out of that? If Bernie Sanders is the presidential candidate, that's an extraordinary sort of blemish on you in the United States. In Europe, it wouldn't matter. In Latin America, it wouldn't matter. But to have been an elector for the candidate of the Socialist Workers Party is truly astonishing. And I think the media has been kind, not to say delinquent, in basically not drilling out these things. And this is not something from the right-wing media. This is from PolitiFact.com, which is a highly reliable, fact-check-oriented, you know, source.
Mm-hmm. Donna, to spring from what Stefan just made in his comments, let's try to see the vantage point of Donald Trump in this. How is he likely to see Biden's comeback here?
Well, we know that Biden is the candidate that Donald Trump fears most, and we know from his tweets that he fears Sanders least in terms of how he, is ginning up this controversy that, you know, it's a Democratic coup against Sanders. And so, you know, I think Donald Trump has an advantage in several ways going into the election in terms of being an incumbent. Depending on what the economy does, his approval ratings are not performing like they should in terms of the economy. But an incumbent president is always a good bet in terms of winning re-election. And so, I think really Trump, and again, with the controversy over Ukraine and Burisma and investigations into Biden, I think that really signaled that Biden was the candidate that they feared the most.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, another thing to think about with Sanders, we talked earlier about, you know, maybe some of his voters stay home if Sanders is not the nominee. But who can Biden bring into the Democratic fold in a general election? Independents, for example. Disaffected Republicans, because they are out there. Mm-hmm. Suburban women that might stay home if the ticket looks a particular way. The Democratic Party has started to coalesce, I think, behind Biden because of some of those fears in that regard. Because what unifies the Democratic Party right now more than anything else, and this is borne out by exit poll data, is that Democrats want to beat Trump.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Before we have some concluding remarks from you, Donna and Stefan, let's get a quick survey of a few people left on the phones here. Mm-hmm. I'm going to ask our callers to be very, very brief, 30 seconds or less. Roberta, you're from Panora. We don't have much time, but thank you for calling. What's the point or question you want to make?
I was for Elizabeth Warren. I did a lot of door knocking and everything else for her. When she could not win her birth state or Massachusetts, her state now, I just felt like Biden is the best man to, or the best person to beat Trump. So I'm going to go with Biden.
That's
100%.
Where you're going. Roberta, thank you for your call. Is this a caller from Oxford? Is it Jolie?
Yes.
Hi, Jolie. Very quickly, what's on your mind?
I just wanted to say I have supported Elizabeth Warren and Amy Klobuchar, and even though I dislike Biden a lot, I will vote for him if that's who the Democrats pick, because the important thing is to take back the Senate, and at least if Biden gets it, we won't lose a senator.
Interesting. Mm-hmm. Strategic thinking from Oxford. Thank you, Jolie. Stephanie in Cedar Rapids. Quickly to Stephanie before our program ends. Welcome to the program.
Hi there. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure thing.
I just wanted to comment about the Biden support, the other candidates leaving before Super Tuesday, and with Bernie having such a groundswell from $3 donations, all these little tiny donations, and putting him on top. I just feel like it seems disingenuous, and it feels like it's going to disenfranchise a lot of people, and they're just not going to go to the polls.
Stephanie in Cedar Rapids, thanks for your call. It's all the time we have for callers. I wanted to wind up by, you've mentioned at this hour, the convention. We have what coming up next week, a number of states, Idaho, Michigan, Missouri, Mississippi, Washington State, and then the following Tuesday after that, Arizona, Florida, Illinois, Ohio. We have the convention, final primaries in June, Democratic convention in July in Milwaukee. Donna, your predictions. Will we have a brokered convention, meaning what, that a nominee is not elected on the first ballot?
Right. And, you know, some people will call it brokered. Some people will call it contested. Brokering kind of refers back to the history of when party leaders were brokering that. I don't think it makes a huge amount of difference there. But this notion, yes, that on that first ballot, somebody wouldn't come out of that. Again, I think it's always possible. And we always talk about it going into a convention. But it's highly, highly unlikely. We can look back at 2008 when, you know, Obama and Clinton went down to the wire. And that wire was June. And the convention in that year was a little bit later, not in July. It is in a party's interest, whether it's Democrats, whether it's Republicans, to coalesce as soon as they can, well before the convention, because you do not want to go into a convention with dissension, especially when you're going against an incumbent president, as Democrats will be. Mm-hmm. And so the party leaders will do everything they can to facilitate that happening.
So it's more of a coronation.
It generally is. Now, again, the possibility is there that could happen, but the odds of that are pretty slight.
Mm-hmm. What's your view, Stephen, as you look toward the July convention?
Yes, and I think, you know, why do we dismiss the superdelegates who will be allowed to vote if no one gets a majority on the first ballot? You know, sort of evil people, smoke-filled rooms, they're throwing the... These are the people who are successful candidates and officers of the Democratic Party. Let's not, you know, diminish them. And I think because the delegates that were elected for all of the candidates that have dropped out in the Democratic Party, they now, in every respect, can vote for whoever they think can beat Donald Trump. They are not tied to the candidate that they ran on.
Mm.
And they will probably go, a lot of them will go with Biden, and some of them may go with Sanders, who are probably the only two who will be left. So I think the delegate count needs to maybe at some point include the delegate, which are not many delegates, but enough delegates perhaps to put someone over the top. And I think Biden will probably get those.
Okay, very quickly. We have about 90 seconds left. It's been a month since the Iowa caucuses. Has it only been a month? It seems like a long time ago. Where Joe Biden finished a distant fourth behind Buttigieg, Sanders, and Warren. Now that we have apparently a two-man race, Donna, what does this say about Iowa as a barometer for a nominee with that track record added?
Well, Iowa has issues, obviously, as we know, in protecting its first position, and that will be a factor in that. However, this is a multi-state process, and states should be allowed to voice whoever they want to vote for. And again, Iowa had an impact. You may disagree with kind of how that impact materialized, but Iowa had an impact. Buttigieg got a little bit of a boost there. Now Buttigieg is out. It's a very unusual campaign season, but, you know, each one is unique.
Iowa eliminated the women and minority candidates, and that is going to be held seriously against Iowa caucuses.
Okay. Stephen Schmidt of Iowa State University, Donna Hoffman of the University of Northern Iowa, we've enjoyed your comments, particularly enjoyed all the input this hour from our listeners. Thank you for answering the call to give us your view on on how you've switched if you backed a candidate who exited. Thank you very much. Stefan and Donna, thank you for coming into our studios today.
You're welcome.
Thanks, Ben.
River to River is produced by Caitlin Harrop, Rick Brewer, and Matt Alvarez. Also help today from Stephanie Nobrega. Our executive producer is Catherine Perkins. River to River is a production of Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Thanks for joining us.